All right. Welcome back to those of you who were here last week. This is part two of our lesson on critical theory and social justice. So most of you probably had not heard before last week of the term critical justice or critical theory, but you probably had heard of the term social justice. And you might maybe have wondered last week, what do they have to do with each other? Hopefully we laid a good foundation for you last week. For that. This week we're going to be discussing some of the implications of this theory and some specifics. In your notes, you should have some of those. You can write those down. My guess is most of you, once I start talking about these, there's going to be a light bulb and you're going to say, oh, that's what that is. All right. I'm going to start off here by reading from Leviticus 19:15 that says this: "You shall do no injustice in court. You shall not be partial to the poor or to defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor." So this is what Scripture tells us. Today we have something a little bit different going on. Today we have a deference shown to certain groups of people. In other words, it's not true biblical justice. All right? We can see that is taking place in our nation. Now, this should never be the case. It shouldn't be the case for anyone. Justice should be blind. I'm going to quickly review here from last week, just in a minute or two, of what critical theory is. Right? And if you remember, we talked about how critical theory came out of Marxism, where Marx said, what's wrong with the world is that we have those who are oppressing and those who are oppressed. And that instead of it boiling down to sin, it actually boils down to those who are oppressed being put down by the oppressors, and that the oppressed need to rise up to unite together. That's where the fist comes from that you see everywhere. Unite and overcome those who are oppressing. And of course, we know that scripturally, the problem with the world is not the oppressors versus the oppressed, although that definitely takes place in the world, but it's sin. Right? No matter what system we have, no matter what's in place, no matter which group of people are in charge, there's going to be issues because of sin. Right? We know this because of Scripture. But critical theory comes along because those who, in the early part of the last century, they saw that Marxism wasn't working. Instead of things getting better, it was getting worse. And so they said, well, we're going to investigate this and figure out why this is. And what they came up with was that it was even more insidious than they thought, and that it's not just the oppressed versus the oppressors, but it's actually the knowledge itself, the language that's used, the knowledge and the big picture stories of what's going on in the world, that was used by those who are in power to oppress the oppressors. And so then they came up with this idea of critically investigating, critically studying the way that we have discourses among ourselves, right? So that's what they did, and they came up with this concept of doing that with all of our language, with all of knowledge. And what they came up with was this idea of deconstructing everything, taking everything and deconstructing it down to where really there was nothing left. And that's where we came up with postmodernism, that the term or the worldview of postmodernism. The problem with that was there was nothing to put in its place, no positive part of that, right? So this, what we know today as social justice, was placed in as a positive way to now reorient society. Okay, so you deconstruct everything, knowledge, language, everything, and then you put back into that language what you want it to be, so that everything's flipped. Those who were the oppressed are no longer the oppressed. They can now be those who are in, they say it's equality. That's what they say the goal is, but it's actually reversing, it's flipping what they say is taking place, all right? Actually, social justice is called by some applied postmodernism. So if you want to think of it this way, postmodernism is looking at things and seeing this is the way it is. This is the way it is, and then social justice is this is the way it ought to be, and putting something in place to make it that way. So this is, social justice is reconstructing discourse in a way that changes the power dynamic in society from the current oppressors to those who are oppressed, right? And I read that off for a reason. Because, first of all, we have to define oppression, all right? This is what Merriam-Webster says of oppression. Oppression is unjust or cruel exercise of authority or power, right? That's what it is. Unjust or cruel exercise of authority or power. We can agree on that. Here's the modern, though, definition of this. Social justice ideology conflates differences or disparities with injustice and oppression. In other words, if there's any kind of disparities between any groups, this is now considered oppression. Wherever disparities exist between groups, social justice assumes that the cause must lie with systemic or institutional oppression of one sort or another. So oppression is embedded in the unquestioned norms, habits, and symbols that have been in place since the founding of our nation, is what they insist. Right? So again, they've changed the definition of what oppression is. Okay? But I'm just going to give you one example of where this is true, but it's not true. How many of you know that females actually score an average of 12 points higher than males on the writing portion of the SAT? Did you know that? So according to this, it ought to be that there's some kind of oppression to the males, but that's not the case, right? So even how they define things, it's not evenly applied, all right? Okay, go on to the next one. Okay, so this is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about post-colonial theory, queer theory. I didn't make up these names, by the way. This is what they're actually called. Critical race theory, feminism and gender studies, disability and fat studies, and then intersectionality, all right? Big words, and is maybe completely new to many of you here, and that's fine, but you're going to start to understand exactly how this has influenced what you're learning even in schools, what you see on TV. Ron Gibson even sent me something from the Cartoon Network this past week that was talking about these very things that was on the Cartoon Network. Okay, and I showed you these signs last week, and these are signs that you see, signs and similar signs of these "we believe" signs. There's all kinds of different variations of these that you see all over the place, I'm sure. I work in Irvington, and they are every other house. They have something like this, right? So, for instance, "we believe Black Lives Matter, no human is illegal, love is love, women's rights are human rights, science is real, water is life, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And again, like I said last week, just at face value, we can basically agree with most of that, right? I mean, some of it's kind of like, love is love. What does that even mean? I mean, that doesn't really explain anything. But it does mean something when this movement is pushing this here. I want to say a couple things, too, as we begin with the post-colonial theory, that there's much overlap in these theories. So as I'm discussing these theories, you're going to see that there's actually a lot of overlap between each one. And there's even some conflict between them, right? Like you have feminist studies and you have gender studies. Feminists have been for many years fighting for equality. Now you have these gender studies that are coming in saying that a man can be a woman if he wants to be, or feels like he is, or believes that he is. And now the feminist groups are saying, wait a second, I've spent my life as a woman, and here comes a man that says he's a woman now. He doesn't know what it's like to be a woman, and there's actually conflict among some of the groups here. But we're not going to focus on that, because they can work that out themselves. Right? Couple of these two contradict even what they say. Like, science is real, water is life. Science is real. What do you think they're getting at there? We're not going to be specifically talking about this one, but what do you think that sign means, science is real? Climate change. That's really what they're getting at. Climate change, all right? And so just understand that that's there for a reason. Of course we believe that science is real. But just like I was talking to my son, does science tell you anything? What do you think? Does science tell you anything? Scientists do. Science just gives you the facts, right? You have to then interpret the facts. It's scientists that then say, this is our conclusion. Science is just simply facts. and then we have to interpret them. So that doesn't even really help us out a lot, all right? Okay, so let's begin with the first one here. So this is what post-colonial theory is. Who can tell me what colonialism is? Does anyone know what that is? Or give me an example of it? You can think of like the Spanish when they would come and conquer nations, and they would come in, conquer it, take over the people, invade. They would make servants of the people, and then they would take their culture and push it onto the groups that they overthrew. All right. So this is what the post-colonial theory does. It really concerns the cultures. So this is the focus is on different cultures. All right, so if you've heard of cultural appropriation or things like that, that stems from this one right here, all right? So it's basically othering of different cultures, making them outside, making them wrong just because they're that culture. Now, we would actually agree with that as Christians. Like, just because another culture does something doesn't make it automatically wrong. And I'm going to talk about these two examples in just a minute here. This is what they do. In post-colonial theory, they reject colonialist control or colonialist meta-narratives, which is control by one power over a dependent area or people, which is what we just talked about. They reject these meta-narratives, these big stories, by focusing on the ways of speaking about things. So they basically say that these cultures come in and not just subdue the other cultures with with the sword, but even with language, with changing the way they dress, with changing the way that they do their hair and things like that. A postmodern mindset says this: the West has constructed the idea, and this is just concerning, for instance, science, okay? The West has constructed the idea that rationality, science, and certain morals and ethics are good in order to perpetuate its own power and marginalize non-rational, non-scientific forms of knowledge production from elsewhere. So they're saying, the postmodern mindset says that morals, ethics, science, everything is basically determined by the power structure. And it's not, there's not really any such thing as true science or true morals, that it's just one group coming in and pushing their morals on someone else. So here, let's look at the pictures. Is there one type of hairstyle that's better than another? What do you think?
Bald.
Bald, there we go. Is there one that's superior to another? What do you think? No, there's not. There's not one right way, even in Scripture. There's not one right way. That's where we can say with this theory, there's some truth to that. Like, we should not say that one type of hairstyle is automatically superior to another type of hairstyle. So we can say we agree with that. But here's another example in India where in India, what they would do was if a husband died, you know what they did with the wife? They burnt the husband, and the wife was expected to jump on the pyre, the funeral pyre, and die with the husband, all right? So now tell me, are there some cultures that have a better understanding of what we should do with that? Yes, right? That's not right. That's a wrong thing to do. So there's some examples where we say there are some cultures that are superior to others in those ways, but we have to have something to judge it by too, right? So the applied postmodern mindset or social justice says this: therefore, we must now devalue white Western ways of knowing for belonging to white Westerners and promote other ones in order to equalize the balance of power. In other words, hey, if they want to do that, if they want to burn the widows, who are we to say? We should not devalue their ways of doing things, right? And that's what they're pushing, things just like that. Of course, the Christian mindset says this: all humans, being made in the image of God, have the capacity to be rational and scientific, but individuals will vary widely. Therefore, all humans should have opportunities and freedoms. That's what we say as Christians, all right? So I'm just going to give you some examples here, or one example from each one or two examples. And you might think that I'm maybe exaggerating my case here, but I'm going to read you off a couple of examples. So in the book Engineering and Social Justice, published by Purdue University Press, they give a lot of examples of these social justice concepts. And they say this: in the book is the recommendation that getting beyond views of truth as objective and absolute is the most fundamental change we need in engineering education. Because of its reliance on the Western idea of objectivity and proof, and also the disparate outcomes in education, mathematics is now called upon to draw upon indigenous worldviews to reconceptualize what mathematics is and how it is practiced. In other words, they're saying, how can we say that the example on the left of 1 plus 2 equals 3, 2 plus 3 equals 5 is the right way? Because other cultures maybe do it this way. They read bones. Who are we to say that one is more correct than the other? Right? And this is actually from Purdue University Press. And you might think this is crazy, but they even have a term for it: mathematics. Mathematx at the end. That's the term for it. It's a new kind of math. And this is being promoted in schools everywhere, things like this. There's a curricula using similar concepts under serious consideration for implementation in public schools at all levels in the Seattle area. This is taking place right now, right? So this is just one example of this. So here's an example of this too. When you see what's going on with the tearing down of statues and things, you might wonder, what are they doing? Well, this is what is being attempted. We're going to erase the white Western European colonial viewpoint of history. We're going to erase that, and we're going to replace it with something else. And that's what you see taking place around the country with the pulling down of statues. Now, some of those statues probably should never have been put up, right? Let's just be honest. There was really no reason for them to be put up, especially down south, all right? So we can say that. However, a lot of what's being torn down is just simply trying to erase history, right? That's taking place. This is one of the things that they say using this theory, that history is written by the winners. How many of you have heard that before? History is written by the winners, so we can't really trust it. Now, is there any truth to that at all? There's some truth to that, right? But it's not all true, right? And so we have to assess all the information, we have to assess all the facts, and we have to look at it and see what's true and what's not, right? But just because it was written by the winners doesn't mean that it's not true. Okay, next one is queer theory. And this one concerns the norms of sexuality and gender. Now, the first one, we have a lot of agreement with, right? We can say, hey, one culture is not automatically better than another, no matter what culture it is. Right? Now, some things about some cultures can be better than other things in another culture, right? Some things are moral issues and they are better. Some things work better, right, from different cultures. This one's a little bit different, though, because this one starts to strike on what's biblical and the way that God specifically made us. So this one rejects the norm of heterosexuality and cisgender identity. What does cisgender mean, by the way? Does anyone know? Have you heard that term before? Cisgender, what does that mean? Can anyone tell me? Yes. Good. Yeah, you're getting it right there. So basically that your brain matches your body. In other words, I think I'm a male, therefore I'm cisgendered. If my brain said I'm a female, but I'm a male physically, then I'm not cisgendered, right? That's the whole, then you're transgendered. You're something other than what your body is. And that's what they're pushing for here, all right? So this insists that society is structured of systems of power and privilege which create the norm in sexuality and gender. In other words, what they're saying is, what they're trying to teach is that the only reason you think, and I think, that heterosexuality is the norm is because the dominant society has told us that. There's no other reason for thinking that. The only other reason for thinking that it's normal for my brain to think that I'm a male is because society has told us that. And there's no other reason. And since the dominant society has oppressed those who are different, then we need to deconstruct that and come up with a new system. All right? And you can see that's what's taking place. So the applied postmodern mindset says, therefore, you must now devalue heterosexual cisgendered identity and promote homosexuality and transgenderism. And that's what you see taking place under the guise of equality. But remember that their version of equality they believe that in order for you to raise up one side, you have to knock down the other side. Right? And that's what we see taking place. Now, the Christian mindset says this: as human beings, our identity is found as image bearers of God. As Christians, our identity is more fully found in Christ. We are not free to determine our own sexual identity or preferences, but are subject to our Creator. However, we are to treat all human beings with the dignity that they deserve as image bearers. That's what we are called to. Now, I want to stop here for just a minute and say that we should have compassion on some people, right? Have you heard of intersex people or androgynous people? Have you heard of that? Can anyone tell me what that is very briefly?
Sometimes people are born with both parts.
It's true. Sometimes people are born with both parts. All right? And what's the cause of that? Which is, from a biblical perspective, what is it? Yeah, of the fall. It would be the same as someone born with three arms or one arm, right? But that's not the norm. So we should have compassion on someone that's actually born that way. In the same way we would have compassion for someone born with no legs, right? That's not their fault. That is not a sin. It's a result of sin. That, however, is different than someone that's born fully male like me and saying my brain says that I am a female, therefore I'm a female. That's different, all right? Go ahead and go to the next one here. I'm going to give you an example of this. And I find it interesting that this, and I'm just going to say it here, this man here is the head of the Pennsylvania Health Department. And if you type in like what states are saying about this, the COVID crisis, this person comes up more than anyone else. And I find that interesting that that's the case. I think there's a reason for that. They're trying to promote. This is Dr. Rachel Levine, Pennsylvania Health Secretary. This doctor is an American pediatrician currently serving as the Pennsylvania Secretary of Health. He serves as professor, and it says she, but I'm going to say he because this is a male. He's actually married with children. He serves as professor of pediatrics and, check this out, psychiatry at the Penn State College of Medicine. He was previously Pennsylvania's physician general. Okay, so if you want to talk about how far we've gone here, this man who believes that he's a woman is the head of the health department. And remember on the sign, what did it say about science? It says it's real. And yet, we see this conflict here that's taking place between what science says. You know, what I put down is, imagine a fire chief who can't identify a fire. Would you want that to be the fire chief? Okay, and that's not, I'm trying not to be too harsh here, but this is truth, and this is what's taking place, right? Okay, go on to the next one here. So I just went to one example here. No, go back one, please. Okay, love is love, and I just use this as an example. So the statement itself is really meaningless. It really is. It doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? You could put any two words there. I mean, trucks are trucks. I mean, what does that mean? You're right. I mean, it doesn't mean anything, really. It doesn't explain anything, right? So love is love. Using the queer criticism, this statement now means that anyone who loves another person, regardless of sex or gender, should be allowed to marry them. A couple things I want to point out about this, though. Talking about the redefinition. First, they've redefined what love is, because biblically, love is not a sexual thing, which that's really what they're talking about. Because they don't mean I can marry my grandma. I love my grandma, but that's not what they mean. All right? That's not what they mean. So it really has to do with sexual attraction. So we've done two things. We've redefined love. What else have we redefined in this? Because it's really concerning something specific. When they say love is love, what are they really getting at? Anyone? What institution are they focused in on? Marriage. And so what are they saying? Hey, should be able to get married if you love somebody else, right? That's what they're getting at. So what have they redefined? Marriage. Okay, marriage does not mean that. Marriage has always meant one man and one woman. In our society, it's always been between a man and a woman. Now, there's some cultures that have more than one woman involved, right? But it's always been a man and a woman. So we've redefined then love, and we've redefined what marriage is, right? Okay, go on to the next one here. Okay, the next one we're going to talk about is critical race theory, right? So the last issue that we talked about was really, it's hard to get around it. Pretty much everything they're focused in on is biblically is a sin, right? This one's a little bit more nuanced here, and I'm going to explain why, and maybe you can already see why this is. So critical race theory is really focused in on race itself, right? An othering of those who are different races. So this is what they would claim, the term really being used a lot today. This is a book, I have this book at home, and it goes through this critical race theory. And again, as you read through what they're saying, some of it's just plain true. Like, it's not that it's all false, which, you know, there can be truth even in falsehood, right? And there generally is some truth. But we just have to be careful about what we're buying into. But this is what they say. This is the white supremacist mindset says this: being white is the norm, and all other races are abnormal. Therefore, being white is superior, and all other races are inferior. Have we done that as a nation since the founding of our nation? What do you think? We have done that. All right? So that's actually true. We have done that. The postmodern mindset says the white majority has constructed the idea that being white is the ideal race in order to perpetuate its own power and to suppress those who are not white. Have we done that? Yes, we have. In many, many ways throughout the history of our nation, okay? So again, this part's true. Social justice, though, this is where we start getting into the problem. Social justice says, therefore, we must now devalue whiteness and promote other races in order to equalize the balance of power. This is where we start running into problem. This isn't the fix to the problem. Carter was talking about Ephesians earlier. Read Ephesians, that's the fix to the problem. It's breaking down the barriers, all right? So I'm just going to give you, this is the Christian mindset, by the way. There are not different races at all, actually, right? How many of you knew that? There's no such thing as race in the Bible. Did you know that? What is it in the Bible? Tribes, nations, ethnicities, right? That's how we would describe it in the Bible. But not different races. How many races are there? There's one. There's the human race, right? We just have different color of pigment in our skin is really all that it is, all right? So we want to pay attention to that. Okay, next one. But I'm going to give you an example here. Of one here, and this is a difficult one, all right? This is Black Lives Matter, and I'm sure you've all heard of this. And of course, that statement by itself, every Christian should be able to say amen to, right? We should be able to say that. And that's what makes this tricky, because we agree with those words, or we should. If you don't, then there's a problem. We should assess our hearts if we don't think that that's the case. Except that's not what Black Lives Matter, the organization, stands for. So when we support the organization itself, we have to take them at their word. All right? This is what they say. This is straight from their website. We affirm the lives of black, queer, and trans folks, disabled folks, undocumented folks, folks with records, women, and all black lives along the gender spectrum. Our network centers those who have been marginalized within black liberation movements. They go on to support the expansion of abortion services in the black community. Black Lives Matter, though, right? And our proponents of defunding the police, they also reject the statement all lives matter because of the Marxist concept of the zero-sum system. In other words, that you have to take one side down in order to raise another side up. Where in order to affirm the black community, you have to suppress the white community who are now in power. Right now, that's a little bit difficult to talk about, but I'm going to go ahead and go to the next one here. But I'm going to tell you what they've done here is in this critical race theory, they've redefined what racism is. Okay, this is the definition in the dictionary. The definition is prejudice based on race. That makes sense. Prejudice based on race, that's what racism is. But they've redefined it. Here is the definition of racism according to critical race theory. It's prejudice plus power. It's not just being prejudiced, you have to have power to go along with it, and then that is racism. Therefore, people of color or those of any minority status cannot be racist because their group lacks institutional power. Because of this definition, only white people can be racist. Only people of color can talk about white racism, while white people need just to listen. Should we listen? What do you think? Should we listen in this discussion? Absolutely. We should listen, and it should be a discussion, right? We should be able to talk about these things, and there should be two sides. And I say, read Ephesians. There's a barrier that's been broken down in Christ. This is especially as Christians, right? These are hard things to talk about. Okay, next, let's go on to the feminism study. Okay, by the way, that book that I had up there is a book that I actually read, and it's like really high up on the New York Times list right now. And it's really frustrating, written by a white woman, but she is actually one of the popularizers of this whole critical race theory. And she basically says that white people can't talk about it because we're too fragile. And pretty much any reaction that we have shows our fragility unless we just are in absolute agreement. Right. She makes a lot of good points in there too. Like I agree with a lot of things she says, but her answer is not a Christian or biblical answer. Right. So we just have to be careful. Okay, next is feminism. So here's what they say. Women are a subordinated class that exists to support men. This is the system as it's been. The male-led patriarchal system exploited the women for their own benefit. By the way, is this true? Since the history of our nation, do you think this is true? In a lot of ways, it's true, right? So it's not like that there's no truth to at all to what they're saying, right? Like you can understand there's some truth in what they're saying, okay? The postmodern mindset then says this. The male oppressor has constructed the idea that being male is superior in order to perpetuate its own power and to suppress those who are not male. And again, there's a lot of truth to that. However, I was just telling, I think I was telling my wife this earlier, but what percentage of police killings are male versus female every year in the United States? A guess? 95%. 95% are male. Now, if we're going to use their own system, their own theory, then it would seem, because only 50% of the people in the United States are men, that the system is rigged against men. Or it could be that men are committing more crimes. Right? It could be that men are we're just more violent. And that's not a shocker anyway, right? Because you see that even when you get together as a group, what are the guys doing? Wrestling and punching and, you know, playing football and stuff like that. Okay. Basically, though, that just would be evidence of, hey, we're different, right? Where there's differences in men and women. Okay. So, social justice mindset says, therefore, we must now devalue maleness and promote the feminist gender in order to equalize the balance of power. This is what they're saying we ought to do. Okay, so this is what the social justice mindset says we ought to do. All right? And I'm going to say here, though, they've taken the term feminism and they've changed the definition. Because feminism just means belief in gender equality, which we should all agree with, As Christians, we agree with that, right? Or we ought to. Of course, it depends on what you mean by equality, right? I have equality with my boss at work. We're both humans. We both have, before God's eyes, full equality. We're made in His image, but my boss is still my boss. So there's not equality in that sense, right? So the feminist study is really all about autonomy. This is what they're trying to get to. The right to have complete authority over oneself has become the rallying cry for this group. And one example here is the Me Too movement. And so what was the Me Too? Do you remember the Me Too movement? It's kind of fizzled out a little bit, but what was its really rallying cry? Do you remember what the rallying cry for the Me Too movement was? Yeah, that's what they were focused on. But what was it they said that you have to do? Believe all women. Believe all women. That's the rallying cry. Remember what we talked about earlier? How you have to push down one group and raise up another group. That's the whole thing, the oppressed versus the oppressor. And of course, the first thing I read was, well, hold on a second. Justice says, I got to weigh the evidence impartially, right? That's what it says. Okay, so let's go to the next one here. So this is what they say, and this actually says it on the, I don't think I have this slide up, but on the one sign that we had. Women are in charge of their bodies. So what does that statement really have to do with? It's really focused on abortion, right? The words themselves, again, don't sound controversial. Well, yeah, that makes sense. If they want to have a wart removed, the government shouldn't come in and tell them not to. If they want to cut their hair a certain way, the government shouldn't come in and tell them not to. But that's not what we're talking about, is it? It's actually a claim to abortion on demand. Rather than being a right over their own body, they now claim a right over the body of their child, 50% of whom are women in the womb. Think about that. So it's not all women. What they really mean is select women are in charge of their bodies. And it reminds me of what happened in the Garden of Eden, where Satan said, you won't surely die. You'll become like God. All right, and so that's what we see taking place today. And look at the anger in the left and their signs, and then look at the little baby. That's who they're saying. They're saying our bodies, our choice, our rights. They're not pro-women. They're not pro-choice. That little baby there doesn't have a choice, does he or she? All right. So this is another example here of this critical theory playing itself out in the world. And by the way, just talking about changing terminologies to sound better, think about pro-choice. Doesn't that sound so good? I mean, who's against choice? We're all for choice, right? But they're hiding something, that it's not about choice. It's about a baby that's going to be killed, that's going to be murdered. That's what it's about, all right? And so this changing language is the same as the term gay. Up until 50, 60 years ago, gay meant happy. So now we change the term to homosexuality or a homosexual, and now it's means something. I mean, we think of the word gay itself, and now it's supposed to represent something happy. Right, so changing the terminologies is what's taking place. All right, and then finally here, and then we'll have the last one that's going to kind of combine these, but is the disability and fat study. And believe it or not, that's actually what it is. That's what it's called. All right, and so this is what they say is the normal mindset. They call it the ableist mindset. Being healthy and able-bodied is the norm, and all other conditions are abnormal. Therefore, being healthy and able-minded is superior, and all other conditions are inferior. And of course, we can say that depends on what you mean by that, what you mean by superior. If I want to live a good life, then I should want to be healthy, right? And there's such a thing as healthy. And if science is real, I would say, then we need to say what is actually healthy. But it's gone pretty off the rails here, and we're going to talk about this. The mindset in here of the social justice says, therefore, we must now devalue healthy and able-bodied persons and promote other conditions in order to equalize the balance of power. And of course, we are to be compassionate of those with disabilities. All right? We are not to make fun of other people that have disabilities. We're not supposed to do that as a Christian. However, it's gone way beyond that. And I think it was my son that was telling me something similar to this. But this has gotten so bad that doctors, if a doctor tells a patient that they need to lose weight, if they are morbidly obese, then he is considered to be trying to kill off black people or fat people. That's what he's considered to be doing. He's trying to kill them off and destroy all fat people. Whereas the doctor's just saying, I care about your health and you need to lose weight, all right? This is how far. And it's gone the other way too, to where if someone has anorexia and they go into the doctor and he says, you need to gain weight, then the same accusation is there. And if someone is blind and there's a surgery you can perform on them to help them to see again, you are destroying disabled people, right? And so this is what they're promoting. This is what they're pushing, all right? Okay, go on to the next one. Okay, so this is what it says here. It says, and I think this is on the other one where it says disabilities are respected. I think that's on the other sign that it says that. But it says disabilities are respected on the other sign that I had up there. There it is. Disabilities are respected. So within disability studies, ableism is largely understood as the acceptance of the assumptions that it is generally better to be able-bodied or healthy than disabled or unhealthy, which we would say, yes, of course, that's what we want. As a matter of fact, we believe as Christians, when we get to heaven, we're going to be perfect. We're going to have perfect bodies. And if we're missing something, I have to wear glasses now. When I get to heaven, I won't. The irony is, if I follow this, is I shouldn't have a doctor telling me to put glasses on because he's trying to destroy people with bad eyesight. It would be this argument, right? It's really kind of crazy. And push those people down. He's oppressing me by telling me to wear glasses, right? This is kind of the absurdity of it. So adherence to this, consider diagnosing, treating, and curing disabilities as cynical practices dependent upon corrupt ableist assumptions in which people are forced to be fully autonomous, highly functioning individuals so that they contribute to capitalist markets. You see how they twist everything around, right? So respected also now means do not try to fix disability or health problems. Doesn't mean just respect the person, which we should do. It means don't try to fix them, right? Okay, and so the next one is intersectionality. And this is from Merriam-Webster. There's different kinds of definitions. The easiest way to say it is everything combined. Everything we just discussed, combine it all together. And in this system, in the critical theory system, those with the highest ranking, if you want to call it that, those that are the most holy saints in their system are the ones that can check off the most. If you are a disabled, foreign, Mexican, heavy person that's a female and transgendered, you would be way up high, right? I don't know if I left something out there, but the more you can check off in the system, the higher you rank in this system, the more so-called authority you have. So they're saying the more diversity that there is, the more things that you can check off, the better it would be in their system, all right? So last two things that we're going to talk about here, and then you can go up to your small groups, is I'm just going to give you a couple examples here of the danger. The last one's going to really be the danger that we're going to see. This is a book called Anti-Racist. Now, that term sounds great, and the term itself should apply to all of us. We should all be anti-racist, except that's not what they mean by it, okay? Ibram Kendi, in his book How to Be an Anti-Racist, explains, this does not mean opposition to racism in the traditional sense. He says, there is no neutrality in the struggle against racism. The opposite of racist is not racist, it's anti-racist. One either believes problems are rooted in groups of people, those who believe this are racist, Or they believe that the root of the problem is in power and policies. Those who believe this are anti-racist. One either allows racial inequalities to persevere, this is a racist, or confronts inequalities, this is an anti-racist. And then this is where he just really falls off the cliff for us. There is no in-between safe space as not racist. To be truly anti-racist is to be feminist. To be feminist is to be anti-racist. We cannot be anti-racist if we are transphobic or homophobic. So you see what's taking place here. If in their system, to be one is to be all of them. And you can't just be one, and you can't just be part of one without accepting all of it. And that's the danger. Because as we've explained, there's parts of this that we would say amen to, right? There's parts of it we would say yes, and we need to be trying to fix problems in our society and even within our own hearts, all right? I would say a couple things too. Even the term homophobic, think about that one. What does homophobic mean? Like, just the plain definition of it. Yeah, a fear of someone who's gay, a fear of someone who's homosexual, right? But that's not what they mean by it. They don't care whether you're afraid of them or not. If you say they're wrong, you're homophobic. If you don't affirm that lifestyle, you're homophobic. You see how the definition's been changed? It's a changing of definitions. And homophobic sounds really bad, right? Of course, my thing would be, if you're going to take the term at face value, homophobic, if I'm afraid of spiders, why are you getting onto me for it? I can't help it. I can't help it, right? You should have compassion for me if I'm truly afraid, but that's not what they mean either, all right? And then finally, I'm just going to give you one example of the way that our society is going. Did I have a last one on there? Yeah, I just wanted a picture to go along with this one. This is something that's actually taking place right now. All right. There are lawyers that are a part of this critical theory ideology, critical theory system that are actually trying to create laws now. And one of them is something called dignity harm. So they're laying the groundwork for dignity harm to replace material harm. So material harm would be like physical injury, stolen property, damaged property, stuff like that, as a legal standard for prosecution and punishment by the state. It's already against the law to do those things. I can't harm someone else or take their property or damage their property. That's against the law. But they're trying to change that now. Okay? So taking everything that we've just learned into account, this is dignity harm. Treating people as inferior regardless of whether anyone recognizes the mistreatment. Causing people to feel inferior intentionally or not. And contributing to systemic moral inequality, intentionally or not. This is where we're headed, all right? And so that's why I'm giving you these warnings. So as you're assessing all these things, as you see people posting things, as you see signs, and you might wonder, I agree with a lot of those statements. Then you have to say, yes, but what do they mean by that statement, all right? You know, just imagine someone in Nazi Germany who come there right when they started using the swastika. And it had no meaning before that, like you didn't know what it meant. And they say, hey, put this sign in your yard. It's for caring about the motherland. It's for caring about your nation. Okay, well, I care about my nation. I'm going to plant the flag in my front yard because I care about my nation. But now we know what the swastika stands for, don't we? And now people don't want to put the swastika because we know it doesn't stand for caring about your nation. It stood for a whole lot of other things that were included in that, right? And so that's what I want you to be aware of. That's what I want you to be careful about as you're thinking about these things. As Christians, we're going to have to be nuanced in all of this because there's some truth that we need to pay attention to, all right? But we just want to be careful, right? Do not believe every spirit. Test everything. These are the things that we hear in Scripture, and so that's what I want to challenge you to do. So the parents can stay here and ask any questions. We can talk about whatever. And then the students, I don't know if you want to come up and dismiss them or if you just want to have them dismiss.
Yeah. Thank you, David, again.